So, you know, the pasuk says, "Al yimna tayv lahalchem b'samim," that people that are trustworthy and are, you know, patient and consistent get good things. So, you guys have indulged me the past couple of weeks in my, you know, Himmeldicke concept. So, I want to pay it back by being pashut and giving you some practical aids that we can learn together. So, again, the sugi that we've been discussing the past number of shiurim has been the topic of emuna, where our emuna comes from, what is emuna. So again, just very much b'kitzur, then we'll flow into the practical tonight. So what we've been learned so far is that according to Chassidus, according to Pnimius HaTorah, emuna, faith, is not something that a Jew ever has to acquire. Emuna is not something that a Jew has to discover somewhere outside of themselves. Emuna is something that's within. Emuna is something that's within. The way we've been saying it is that the emuna comes from that part of the nefesh, that part of the neshama, which is so intimately bound with the Rabbanu Shel Olam that it's almost impossible to really separate the two. The way we've been saying it was that the neshama, the part of the neshama that has the eyes of the Rabbanu Shel Olam, it sees things from the Rabbanu Shel Olam's perspective. And that's the part of the neshama that where that emuna comes from. And when we call what we call emuna, what we call just simple faith or blind faith, that's that part of the neshama trying to communicate, trying to give over its experience of life and seeing how everything is a part of the Rabbanu Shel Olam. And what that does, therefore, the emotional reaction to that reality is that issues don't bother that neshama so much. Not that we don't want to look for explanations, but even if we don't have explanations, it doesn't change anything. Reality is still einad muvada. And so that part of the neshama is always communicating emuna. What the difficulty, what makes emuna difficult, what makes what our job is in terms of developing emuna is namely that, it's developing emuna. It's allowing that voice, it's allowing that experience of the deepest part of the neshama to come out. And what we're going to learn tonight are different etzes that we find in the Sfarim to allow that emuna to express itself in a healthy way. Now just to explain, very simply, there are basically three factors that make emuna difficult, that make emuna hard, that make it an avoida. And that's the three factors are as follows. We're going to see tonight different etzes and different, I don't want to say the word skulas, but different avoidas that we can do to sort of minimize the issue, these three issues. Issue number one. Issue number one that is the following thing, is that at the same time that voice of that inner part of the neshama, again, that has the eyes of the Rabbanu Shel Olam, so it's, again, it's sending out its signals. It's trying to express itself. It's calling out to the rest of us, to the rest of who we are, that Einam Levadu, all there is Rabbanu Shel Olam, something to worry about. Be confident and be strong. Mishkeferelech. The problem is that at the same time, there's a tremendous amount of noise that's coming from our bodies, that's coming from the part of us that sees things as we see it. And so that alone sometimes, you know, drowns out the voice of the inner part of the neshama. So that's one issue that faces emuna. Again, it's not so much the kashas, but it's the fact that the experience, the seeing reality the way we see it, you know, it's a very loud world, and that sometimes again drowns out the voice of the inner neshama. That's issue number one, and therefore we're going to have to find etzes how to turn down the volume on our human side. The other issue is the fact that the voice of the inner part of the neshama, the voice of where emuna comes from, not only is it being bombarded with other noises coming from the outer part of who we are, but even its own voice is very—it's very low. The volume is not turned up too loud, and it's more than that. It's not obviously I'm using the mashal of volume, but the point is that it's not. It has a hard time communicating. Because again, it's like, how does a person that has sight communicate what it looks, what color looks like to someone that, God forbid, doesn't? It's a different language. There are very, very few words that you can use to describe this. So when that deepest part of the neshama tries to express what reality is, when it opens its eyes, it doesn't have a lot of communicative skills to give that over. So again, the issue is double. On the one hand, it has a hard time communicating itself, giving off, expressing itself. That's number one. And number two, at the same time, the other part of who we are, the human part, expresses itself very loudly and very clearly. And so this is the double-edged sword. This is the two basic problems. The third issue The third issue is it's a principle in Yiddishkeit, which is that whenever you want any level of Kedusha, any level of God's presence to come into your life or to be revealed in your life, the klal is, and this is something that's an interesting principle, we find this in many places, is that you have to create an environment which is conducive to that. I'll give you an example. Chazal say that Ein HaShchinah Shruya El Mitoich Simcha, that the divine presence only rests on someone if they're in a state of simcha. So for example, like a Navi wouldn't be able to have Nevuah unless he was besimcha. See, that doesn't only mean that when you have Nevuah, you're already besimcha. It means in order to have Nevuah, you have to create an environment which is conducive, which allows that experience. So for the Navi to even begin the process of becoming a Navi, he had to be besimcha. So the same thing it is with Emunah. Since Emunah is not an intellectual idea, or this answer to Akasha, it's a revelation of the soul. So that revelation of the soul needs to be, there needs to be an environment set up that's conducive to that. And so what therefore a person also has to do is to create an environment that they live in that fits with what a person that has Emunah would look like. And then the Emunah is comfortable to come out. It's like, think of it, this is not, it's like an immature mashal, but think of it like a little scared turtle or something. You know what I'm saying? It's very intimidating. It doesn't want to come out of its shell. You have to create an environment that makes it comfortable to come out. And then it'll come out. So these are the three areas that we have to work on. Number one, the bombardment, the noise that comes from the body, that comes from that part of us that sees things as a human being, is very, very loud. That's one area, that's one issue. The other issue is the lack of communicative skills that the deepest part of the neshama has. It doesn't have a lot of ways to communicate itself properly. That's two. And number three, the environment that we have to set up has to be conducive for Emunah to come out. Okay. So let's learn tonight some of the skulas, some of the eights that we have in all these different three things. And what we're going to find is that in the Svarim, that I'm going to quote to you, again, I apologize, you don't have the Maamar Kamus in front of you, but what we're going to see is, it's a fascinating thing that all the storm that we're going to go through tonight are all dealing with the same issue, which is a guy that is struggling or a girl that's struggling with issues of Emunah, with questions of faith. And what's so interesting is that none of them actually give the Eitzah of trying to answer the Kasha. Because again, that's not really the Shayrish of the Inyan. If you answer one Kasha, there'll be another Kasha soon. Every teretz leads to another kasha anyway. In Sifrei Chassidus, again, all they're trying to do is to get to the bottom of the issue, which is to reveal one's own emunah to the point of where the kasha just doesn't bother you anymore. Okay, so let's tackle each area on its own. And like everything else in life, whenever you have like a sort of a smorgasbord of different schools and different eights, everyone has to find their own thing, right? So halavai, a person should take all these eights that we're going to learn tonight and do all of them. That'll be a gebaldige thing. But you find something that speaks to you, and you know, a person has to be flexible. It's a big call in Yiddishkeit too, to be flexible. And to know that the Ribbono Shel Olam sometimes wants to be served in a particular way, and then tomorrow to be served in a different way. A person has to know that sometimes what the neshama needs and the way they have to engage their own neshama changes based on the tekufas. So number one, in terms of lowering the volume of the guf. So, b'derech klal, generally speaking, any avera, any sin that a Jew does, ultimately has ramifications in this particular aspect. What is an avera? Well, what is an avera? There's a lot of issues that happen when, God forbid, a person sins. But one of the issues is that you're raising the volume of your body. You're raising the volume of not just your body, of your yetzahara, of everything that's the opposite of your neshama. You're giving increased energy to it. So anytime, God forbid, a person does anything that's against Torah and Shulchan Aruch, automatically it's going to, unfortunately, have a negative effect on their own Emunah. Why? Again, not because you're necessarily Chas V'Shalom destroying that part of you that is Emunah. That can't be done. That's eternal. But the point is that you're raising, by doing an Aver Chas V'Shalom, the person is adding fuel to that fire that's called the Guf, and automatically it's going to increase the noise that the body emanates, which is just going to overshadow and drown out the voice of the neshama. So automatically it's like that. But there's a couple in Yanim in particular. There's a couple in Yanim in Yiddishkeit in particular that have this quality of just turning up the notch of the guf. very much so, to the point of where Amunah becomes that much more difficult. So there's a sefer in Chassidus, it's called Safnas Paneach. There's a famous Safnas Paneach from the Rugged Shavar. This is not the Rugged Shavar. There's a sefer written by the Degel Machne Ephraim. The Degel Machne Ephraim was a grandson of the Baal Shem Tov. It's interesting. As I'll say it outside, you'll see right away what I'm talking about. His personality was a very strong, like straight. You know, he did not sugarcoat things. He just said it straight. So in this sefer Tzavtan Spanech in Parshas Yisroi, he brings down a letter a correspondence that he had with a certain rav or Rosh Hashiva somewhere, not from a Hasidic background. And this Rosh Hashiva was the shalos back and forth were questions about certain gemaras and hashkafic issues. So this is what the Degel Machne Ephraim responds. He says like this: "Midvareichem, from your words, Nira, it seems to me, shatam kaifrim v'devar Chazal, that you're kaifrim, that you're going against the words of Chazal, that you're denying Chazal. I could just pick up on your words that there's a lack of amunas chachamim that you have. This is a Talmud Chacham that he's writing to. That's what he says. Again, he says it straight." Im Kane, so it's interesting. So if let's say we were in the Degel Machne Ephraim's position, and now we're giving advice to someone who's struggling with Amunas Chachamim, what would we say? I don't know. You have to learn a little bit of how great the Chachamim were, learn about the Messiah, I don't know, something like that. He says, Im Kane, what that's telling me, says Degel Machne Ephraim, is Leinis Harta Meachilas Isser Udvarm Tameim. It means that you're not careful enough in your kashrus, as he says. By eating food that's not 100% kosher, that automatically weakens one's emunah. He says, "V'haseichel v'adash alechem," because your human intellect, your brain, your body, nasim ha'damim shel tarfus v'yisurim. You are what you eat, right? So in other words, when a person, chas v'shalom, eats something that's not kosher, it means that their body is becoming literally transformed. The food that they eat becomes their body and their intellect. And therefore automatically their human side, which is now literally coming from non-kosher food, is automatically going to be inclined to that which is unholy. Now this is, an amazing thing. This goes back, the Arizal himself talks about this in a number of places, that again, this principle of you are what you eat, the more a person is makbid on eating food that's kosher, and being makbid on saying brachas properly, automatically, that's cutting off the fuel supply of the Yetzirah. Now, there's the mashal that's very often given in the Sfarim is that, let's say you have armies that are attacking each other. So there's one approach which is just, head on, just face the enemy and attack them. But a real smart and a clever general, instead of just sending soldiers and waves upon waves of soldiers to sometimes be killed and sometimes be matzliach, if the general is able to figure out the fuel supply or the weapon supply, the food supply of the enemy army, and is somehow able to cut off that supply, then now he just won the war very easily, somewhat. So we're very often when it comes to the Yetzirah, we're like bombarded with noise and nisyonis and temptations, and it's just like wave upon wave upon wave of enemy soldiers. And so our usual approach is just fight back. But we have to be a little bit more clever about it. If we could figure out what is the fuel supply, where is the energy source of our Yetzer coming from, what's fueling that volume, that noise, that's drowning out the voice, our internal voice of Emunah, well, that if we could then somehow diminish Al Kapanim, that fuel supply, it would make our lives a lot easier. And what the Sfarim HaKadoshim are telling us is that a major fuel supply, a major food supply and weapon supply, supply chain for the Yetzer is what we eat. So it means to eat things that are unfortunately not kosher, or even things that are kosher to make a bracha. You know, I was about a couple of years ago, I was having a conversation with someone who wanted, he was debating back and forth, he wanted to become a vegetarian. He wanted to know if it's appropriate, if it's okay. So I asked him, why do you want to be a vegetarian? Like, what's... So he said that the reason why he wants to be a vegetarian is because he feels that the animal, when it's being shechted or the way it's being raised or whatever it is, it's so traumatized by the experience that the negative feelings or the trauma goes into the meat, whatever it is, and it'll go into me, it'll make me more of a nervous person. Okay, right or wrong, I don't know, maybe it's baloney, I'm not sure, sounds a little bit just like a baloney, but whatever it is. I told him, the truth is, there's a lot more klipas and tumas going on in an animal than you could possibly imagine from the little stress of the knife. As stressful as that might be for the animal, there's a lot worse stuff going on. And with all that being said, Chazal, in their unbelievable wisdom, gave us an etza to mamish clean out all the tumas and all the issues that might be found in even kosher food. And that's by making a bracha. By simply making a bracha properly, I'm not talking about having kavana, just making the bracha properly, the right bracha with the right words and saying it clearly, you're already getting rid of so much fuel that theoretically, unfortunately, could be feeding the fire of Yon Yetzer and Yon Guf. Mm-hmm. So the point is that one of the strongest aids that we have to push it, strengthen one's amunah. Again, this is indirect. It's not strengthening one's amunah, but it's al kapanim lowering the volume of every of other noise. Is simply eating better. It means eating obviously the food that we're allowed to eat, the right amount of food, and making brachas. Simply put, that's what he says. And if a person, unfortunately, therefore, that's what the Gemachin from is saying, is that you see someone that maybe is deficient in Amunah, one of the factors could be about what they're eating. Another issue that's brought down in this farm along the same lines, in terms of a particular Inyan in Avodas Hashem that has a way of increasing the noise and the volume of the Yetzara and the human intellect, and it naturally is drawn to negative things and clouds over the Amunah that we already naturally have, is something that I'm not going to talk about in the mixed crowd, but it's the Inyan of men and women. The Inyan of watching one's eyes and acting properly in that area, that's also a major, major Inyan that has a way of clouding one's natural Amunah. So if a person's mechazik themselves in what they eat and what they look at and so on, that's already mamish, like, you know, 80% of the battle. All of a sudden, when a person is makran on these things even a little bit to increase their kedusha on these levels even a little bit, automatically they'll find themselves having more strength in their Yiddishkeit on all levels. Their emunah will be healthier and clearer. Their avodas Hashem will be better. Davening, learning, everything will increase. Just push it by being makbid with what we eat better. And in the area of men and women, it's a tremendous, tremendous school. Rav Tzadik, for example, says this is hinted to in the pasuk itself. The mitzvah of in 6:13 that we have for the mitzvah of emunah is Anoich Hashem Lekech, right? I'm Hashem your God. That's emunah. I'm Hashem your God. That's how the Rambam counts it. So the Mefarshim say, you know, the end of the pasuk is I'm Hashem your God. Asher it's a sicha meretz mem, they took you out of Egypt. So the Mefarshim say, I understand if Hashem is like introducing himself and showing how amazing he is, why does he not talk about creation? I am Hashem that created the world. Why talk about Mitzrayim? So says Rav Tzadik, the pasuk is trying to tell you, Anoich Hashem Lekech, I am Hashem, you got another emunah. And what the Rabbanu Shalom is saying is, and I'm not commanding you to believe in me, I'm telling you the reality. The reality is you already believe in me. What's your avoida then? Your avoida is to lower the volume of the dimyon, of the fantasies, of the illusions, of just the part of you that's not real, the part of you that's not the deepest part of who you are. And the Rabbanu Shalom is trying to tell us, and I'll prove to you how you're capable of this, is because I took you out of Mitzrayim. Mitzrayim is a place of dimyon, Mitzrayim was a place of fantasy. Even later on in Chumash, when Klal Yisrael in Sefer Bamidbar, they're up against issues and they're always kvetching about coming back to Egypt, right? They always talk about the food that they had, the watermelon, chvesvas, all the different delicacies that they had in Mitzrayim, right? Mitzrayim was a place of a lack of being careful with what a person eats, and Shtufei Zim was a place of arayas as well. It's Ervas Haaretz. Those two inyanim of achila and the inyan of men and women, that's something that increases, again, it clouds over, it blocks one's natural amunah. And the Rabbanu Shalom is saying is that ever since I took you out of Mitzrayim, it means you're capable of being maminim. So it's a Anoich Hashem Lekech, you have the mitzvah of Amunah, why? How do you know that you have the strength to actually do it and to live up to that standard that you have within you? Asher Tzitzicha Meretzam, because they took you out of Egypt. And that means that you have the ability to be mechazik yourself in those areas. So that's issue number one. That's number one. That's, again, in terms of lowering the volume. All to be makbid in all averis, not to, you know, to do everything we have to do. But in particular, those two areas are very, very strong. Okay. Now in terms of the positive. What can we do, or what did the Rabbanu Shalom give us? What tools do we have to give the neshama better ways of communicating? Right? Because again, you lower the volume of the body, and you have to now give kalim and give sort of a loudspeaker, whatever it is, to the neshama, to that part of the neshama that sees things as God does. So what do we have? What tools do we have? So the truth is, all of Torah is like that. All mitzvahs, all the 613 mitzvahs, all the 248 positive, I should say, are really tools that the Rebbe Hashem gave us to increase the volume of our neshama. And by every mitzvah that we do, you're increasing the volume of your own emunah. Now, we'll speak soon, Bez Hashem, about a particular way to go about doing mitzvahs to help this process. But before we get to that, there are some particular mitzvahs or particular things that we can do, particular exercises that we can do to help this, to help our neshama out, to give it more expression. And that's the following. There's a sefer called Minchas Yehuda. It's Minchas Yehuda quotes from the Baal Shem Tov. This is again one of the early Chassidish Sfarim. He says like this, Mea Baal Shem Tov. This is a quote, this is a teaching from the Baal Shem Tov. He says like this, Hamuna, and initially this sounds like a very simplistic thing, but, and it is, but it runs deep. He says like this, Hamuna Toila Bepeh. Baal Shem Tov said that one's Amuna is dependent on one's mouth and how a person communicates. He says like this, Kamesha Kasav, it says in Pasuk, in Tehillim, Idea Emunas Chabafi, I let your faith, speaking to Hashem, I let your faith be known through my mouth. Meaning, Kasha Adam Noifil Me'amuna Chasav Shalom, said the Baal Shem Tov, when a person finds themselves falling and struggling with Emunah, Eitza Lazeh, what's the Eitza? Again, not to necessarily find the answer to the question, Eitza Lazeh, the real Eitza is, Sheyidaber Bepem Mole, to verbalize, to literally say out, maybe close the door and be by yourself, but to say out, Bepem Mole, with a clear voice, Shumamin Babar Yisbruch, to read the 13 Ikrim, you know what I mean? To say out Bepem Mole, in a clear voice, that you believe in the Rabbanu Shloilam, Shaideza Yispata Moiche Bemunach Hazaka, and this has a way of convincing your human brain that you actually believe, because you anyway do. In other words, if a moon is something that you have to acquire, then just saying it doesn't accomplish anything. You're just brainwashing yourself. The answer is you already do believe. The only issue is that your human brain is confused a little bit right now. So if you speak out with your own mouth how you do believe, despite the fact that in your brain you think you don't, but you say the words I do, ki soif ma'isa machshav v'techila. We have a principle in the Sfarim, we say this in the Chadaydi, is that soif ma'isa machshav v'techila, the very, very end, the most external element of who a person is connected with the very deepest element of who a person is. Beginnings and ends are tied to each other. This is a principle in Torah. Beginnings and ends are tied to each other. For example, if a person sits down and has a plan about a certain project they're going to do, the first initial thought that comes to their mind is the very, very end of that process. So the guy's building a house, whatever it is, the first thought that he has in the entire process and in the entire plan of building the house is the barbecue he's going to have for his friends after the house is already made. Now that I have that final vision in my mind's eye, now let me start to build the house, right? Saif Maisa, the very, very end of Machshav Tchila. And when a person eventually gets to the very, very end, it awakens within that person the desire and the excitement they had at the very beginning, right? When you're smack in the middle and you're dealing with workers that are now on strike and making you crazy, the excitement is not really there so much, right? The excitement is in the very, very beginning when you get the first idea of having that barbecue, and then at the very, very end when you actually make the barbecue. Beginnings and ends are tied to each other. What's the deepest part of who we are? The emunah from within. What's the most external part of who we are is what you say. The beginnings and ends are tied to each other. Said the Baal Shem Tov, if you say words of Emuna, it awakens the deepest part of who you are that actually does believe. So this is not just a psychological trick. If you say it, you'll convince yourself. It's much deeper than that. It is true that the human brain, you're just convincing yourself of something. But deeper than that, it has a way of being ma'ayra, of awakening the deepest part of who you are. In the Sefer Kabbalah, for example, this is called Keser Malchus. Keser means a crown. That's a term that usually is connected with the deepest part of who you are. And Malchus means kingship. That usually is connected with your words and the most external part of who you are. Like the king expresses his power through his words. He tells the servants what to do. Keser Malchus and kingship and a crown are interconnected, right? The symbol of one's kingship is their crown. So again, these two bookends, the way a person speaks is connected with the deepest part of who they are, which is also, by the way, why Shmiras HaLashon, right? Being careful with what a person says is also very connected with one's emunah. It's very connected with one's emunah. Anything that happens with the mouth, eating, talking, it's always very much connected with emunah. So again, this is what the Baal Shem Tov said. Ha'etzah lezeh, again, the etzah for emunah, the most simple etzah is to speak words of emunah, to say out loud that you believe, despite the fact that you think you don't. That's number two. Another connection, another Eitza, connected also with one's speech, but a little bit more specific. Baal Shem Tov, there's a sefer called Baal Shem Tov Al HaTorah. It's a collection of teachings that are said from Baal Shem Tov throughout all Chassidish Svarim, they put it on the parasha. So in Parashas B'Shalach, Baal Shem Tov said the following thing. We know it's related to the time that we're in, coming close to Purim. So it says, we know the whole story of Amalek, right? The Jewish people, we stood by Kriyas Yam Suf, by Aminu B'Hashem Moshe Avda, they had unbelievable Muna. It was mamash, you could touch it, you know, it was very, very clear. We go a few days, we go to the place that's called Rafidim, and all of a sudden, our Muna becomes shaky. The Pasuk says that the Jewish people started questioning, is Hashem with us or not? Whatever that question was, but clearly there's something lacking in our Amunah at that point. And then automatically, Amalek physically comes and attacks us. So the Baal Shem Tov said that, even though, you know, the way it's simply put is that we lacked of Amunah, there was somehow a deficiency in Amunah, and because of that, the punishment is Amalek comes to attack. Baal Shem Tov said it's, even though that's the way the story played out, it was deeper than that. The poison of Amalek, was in fact what caused our Amunah to be decreased. What is Amalek? Amalek is the antithesis of Amunah. Whatever Amunah means, Amalek means the opposite. Amalek means the sophisticate, the one that's skeptical. That's why, for example, Chazal always make the contrast between Yisro and Amalek, right? Both Yisro and Amalek heard about Yitzhak's Mitzrayim. Very opposite reactions, right? Yisro is so inspired that he comes to become a Jew, and Amalek is so inspired that they come to attack us. And Chazal explained the contrast between them is the following way, that Yisro is considered, he's called the Pesi, he's called the simpleton, the one, the gullible one, in a good way. And Amalek is described as the sophisticate, the one that's always questioning, the one the opposite of being gullible, the one that always is looking for something to explain it by not being so simple with Amunah. So Amalek, so it's not the pshat that the Jewish people fell in Amunah, they had a lowering in Amunah, and Amalek attacks. No, the falling of their Amunah, the dropping of their Amunah was itself an attack of Amalek. And it was only a matter of time till the physical Amalek attacks. The spiritual Amalek already did. So what's the Eitzah? So what happens then in the story is that Moshe Rabbeinu then wages war against Amalek. He sends Yeshua ben Nun. And what does he do? So we know Yeshua ben Nun is fighting the physical war, whereas Moshe Rabbeinu is fighting against the spiritual attack of Amalek. So in other words, what Moshe Rabbeinu does is telling us what to do when you are attacked by the spiritual Amalek, which is attack on your Amunah. What do you do? So what did Moshe do? So it says in Pasuk, Moshe goes to the mountaintop, raises up his hands. V'hi yadav emunah. His hands are emunah. So said the Baal Shem Tov like this. If you take a look at Targum Unkelus, on those words, v'hi yadav emunah, the pasuk is, v'hi yadav emunah by Hashem, his hands were faithful. In other words, simply put, his hands were raised and he kept his hands up there. Like you could, his hands were trusted. You could trust that his hands were raised ad by Hashem the whole afternoon until sunset. Mincha time. So Targum Unkelus translates v'hi yadav emunah is the following translation. V'avayudohi perishin betzilu, that his hands were raised in davening. Said the Baal Shem Tov, what that tells you is as follows. V'lamad oisa Moshe Rabbeinu, that Moshe Rabbeinu was teaching each and every one of us, l'sakin es atzmam, to fix, to correct, to go on the offensive, and to go against Amalek, to be mechazig one's emunah, which is by what? Which is through davening. So the Baal Shem Tov, hatakana lezeh, the tikkun for one's emunah, to strengthen one's emunah, is sheyivakish rachamim Hashem yisparach, sheyichazig one's emunah, to daven to Hashem, that He should strengthen your emunah. Which is again, so counterintuitive. I'm having questions of whether there is a God, and you're telling me to daven to Hashem that I should believe in Him. So the Baal Shem Tov, yeah. Because you already do, that's not the issue, you already do. It's daven to Hashem. Again, the mouth, it's related to the mouth. Daven to Rabbanu Shloilam, and that itself will strengthen your Amunah. The Baal Shem Tov went further. What particular davening is more mesugal to this? Said the Baal Shem Tov, well, again, look at the Pasuk. Moshe's hands are davening, his hands are faithful, from the afternoon until sunset, mincha. Said the Baal Shem Tov, of all the tefillahs that have the biggest power to daven in particular for your Amunah to be strengthened, it's mincha. There's a ma'aseh of the Baal Shem Tov with this, by the way. One of his greatest students was someone by the name of Pinchas Karitzer. He's an Adam Gadol in his own right, big makovel. So the ma'aseh goes that Pinchas Karitzer, his introduction to the Baal Shem Tov was with the following story. There was, I don't know exactly like what this was exactly, but evidently there was a huge tidal wave, by Pinchas Karitzer's time, which really did a lot of damage to one of the coastal cities in whatever part of Europe this was, you know what I mean? So, and when Reb Pinchas heard about this damage that was done to that particular coastal town, his initial reaction was like, you know, it's really dangerous, I guess, living on the coast. And Reb Pinchas, that was his initial thought, that came, which is probably a normal thing to think. But then Reb Pinchas was so upset that was his initial reaction. He said, what type of emunah is that? That the reason why it happens is because they're living on the coast. My reaction should have been that the Rabbanu Shalom did it to them. The Rabbanu Shalom could have done it to any other town in a different way. His initial reaction was nature. And that bothered him deeply, that was his initial reaction. And because of that, he decided he's going to go to the Baal Shem Tov. Because clearly his emunah is not 100%. So he travels to the Baal Shem Tov, and the Baal Shem Tov, you know, reads his mind, you know, and understands what he needs. And the Baal Shem Tov says, you need an Eitzah to b'chazik your emunah. So Baruch Hashem, you came at the right time. We're about to have mincha. Go down mincha for the Amid. Go down mincha for the Amid. He said, and the Baal Shem Tov told him this Torah that Moshe Rabbeinu's hands were emunah, dafka, at the end of the day, mincha time. That's when he attacked Amalek. That's when he fought against Amalek. And so, again, this is a tradition that already just davening mincha by the Baal Shem Tov, it was cured as emunah, and the rest, you know, the rest is history, as they say. But that's, again, davening, but in particular emunah, by mincha. Which, by the way, on a simple level, I mean, we know that mincha is a tefillah, which very often we find to be difficult. It's mamash smack in the middle of your hishtadlus, you know what I'm saying? Like during the day when you're doing your things, which is less conducive to be a mom in any way. You know, work where you're doing everything that reinforces the illusion of that we're in control. And dafka, then you stop what you're doing to daven mincha. So it's a particular inyan of the mechazik one's emunah, dafka with tefillas mincha. Okay. Rabbi Nachman, by the way, in Breslov Chassidus, this is one of the Ikar Eitzes. One of the Ikar Eitzes in all of Breslov Chassidus, it's a daven that the Rabbanu Shalom should help in your emunah. And again, the davening that a person does, again, it's not just asking for siyata shmaya. We'll see soon. It's a way of allowing your neshama to express itself as well through your tefillah. That we'll get to soon. Another Eitzah. Again, this is just going through Eitzahs. Another Eitzah. This is from Reb Pinchas Karetzer himself. There's a sefer called Imre Pinchas, which is a collection of teachings from Reb Pinchas Karetzer. So, good to see you. So the Imre Pinchas in Shar Torah Eismem Aleph, he says the following thing. Amr Labanov, it's recorded that Reb Pinchas Karetzer would instruct his children. And by the way, this Eitzah is so interesting. And the fact that we, Derech Klal, don't do this, it tells you a lot. It tells you a lot. He's like this. Amr Labanov, he told his children, Sheyizruhu Lilmaid Tanakh. He told his children, of all the things to learn, you have to learn Gemara, Halacha, you know, you have to learn everything. But be strong to every single day to have a Seder to learn Tanakh. Just Pashit, Psukim, Nevi'im, Ksuvim, to learn Tanakh. Ki Nevi'im, and in particular, Nevi'im and Ksuvim, he says, Ki Nevi'im, him beside Netzach Vahayd. He says, Kabbalistically speaking, Nevi'im and Ksuvim in particular are connected to one's feet, to the concept of feet. Like, I'm not going into this right now. They said, Raglan hamachzik and hamuna. And therefore, a person's feet is connected with one's emuna. In other words, that's what you stand on. Your Yiddishkeit standing on your emuna. So when a person is struggling in emuna, it means that their feet are weak. Their spiritual feet, so to speak. And so how do you strengthen your spiritual feet? By learning Nevi'im and Ksuvim. This is something that, and that, again, you'll get our holy, you know, educational system, which is unbelievably holy, and I could not do a better job at all, chas v'shalom. But we all know that there's a tremendous weakness in terms of learning Nevi'im and Ksuvim. And there's reasons for it, don't get me wrong. There's historical reasons, because, you know, the past couple hundred years, the people that were more inclined to learn Tanakh were not necessarily the most God-fearing, right? And there's more practical reasons, which is that it's very hard to learn. I mean, what's going to be when you're learning about Nevi'im and, you know, David Melch is cutting people's heads off, and the kids ask, like, what's going on? And the Rebbe doesn't know himself what the answer is, because we don't know, not too many people understand those stories anyway. So there's a lot, you know, it's hard to teach something that you don't really understand yourself. But with all that being said, a person that learns Nevi'im, even just reading the words, I'm not talking about Be'in with Mefarshim, that already is like Tarshav Al Peh. I'm talking about just Tanakh. Just simply reading Tanakh and allowing the words to sort of flow over you, one can feel one's emunah becoming stronger. It's just, there's something about the words. There's a power to it. By the way, even if a person isn't able to sit down and to learn Nevi'im and Ksuvim, which we should, and it's not hard, you just take an English Tanakh and read. It's not hard, necessarily. But even every single week, Monday and Thursday, or on Shabbos by Kriyas HaTorah, you know, it's, again, it's a big chaval. The sudden knows what he's doing. The Sadan knows exactly what part of tefillah and what part of Yiddishkeit to poke holes in. He knows what he's doing because he knows that if our emunah was strong, he'd be out of business. And so, if all the inyanim tefillah b'chlal is related to one's emunah, right? As we saw before, but particularly b'kriyas hatar, which is allowing the words of Tanakh, the words of the Rabbanu Shalom himself, to wash over us, that strengthens a person's emunah very much. And let's explain. This isn't just tam eskula. Again, where does emunah come from? Emunah comes from the part of our neshama that is God, the part of our neshama that sees things from God's perspective. So if you learn the words of Tanakh, which are the words of the Rabbanu Shalom from his perspective towards us, that reinforces that side of who we are. In other words, that part of who we are, which is emunah, is Tanakh. It's the same thing. Torah Shebaal Peh is our side of the story, right? Torah Shebichsav is the Rabbanu Shalom side of the story. The more we can learn and give voice to that, to everything that's coming from his side of the table, namely Tanakh, automatically reinforces one's emunah. So it's a beginning to listen to Kriyas HaTorah, obviously not to talk, but more than that, to listen to it, to allow the words to sink in, to learn Nevi'im and Ksuvim. It's a very, very strong inyan, a very strong skula. That's from Pinchas Karitzer. One final practical etzah, and then we'll move into a little bit more of a general idea, is another thing from Pinchas Karitzer to Mechazik Emunah. In Sefer Taras Adam, again, also in that collection of teachings, he says like this. This is also very practical, and it's so simple, and once you hear it, it's like, why didn't I think of that? But it's a very practical thing. Is it Tzarech Lahamin Be'amunah Shlema? First, he starts off with the basics, that a person has to have perfect faith, simple faith. She'ashem Yisbarach Levadei Maneh Hakol. The Rabbanu Shlolem is guiding our lives. That's Emunah. The Rabbanu Shlolem is taking care of us. Ve'in Shum Siva Me'ila, and all the Sibas, all the Hishtadlis that we do, aren't really the things that are helping us. And despite that, we still have to do a shtadlis, right? Again, why do we have to do a shtadlis? It's not for now. But lemaisa, the reality is, we still have to go to work, we still have to do a shtadlis. You're sick, you go to the doctor, right? But it means that while you're doing the shtadlis, not to fall into it too much, right? To believe that it's not really coming because of the doctor, although he's a good shliach, or she's a good shliach, it's the Rabbanu Shalom, but you still do what you have to do. Va'adarabi, therefore, said Pinchas Karitzer in Eitzah, Kisha'oisa hasiba, therefore, whatever hishtadlis that you're doing in life, again, whether it be for parnasa, for health, or whatnot, tzarech la'aseh davka oz siba miyuchedes, l'ischaze yoyse b'munasi yisparach, then at the same time, or along with that, do some physical act to reinforce your emunah. So in other words, a person is spending, 15, hours a day working which is all hishtadlis to make a parnasa, and what are they doing to reinforce their emunah? Nothing but saying the right things, davening three times a day, which is gevaldik, but that doesn't necessarily even the playing field. You're doing so much physical activity and physical energy in the hishtadlis side, so the Seder Pinchas Karitzer, then at the same time, you got to do something physical to reinforce your emunah. So he doesn't give any examples of this, but each person has to find something in their own. I mean, let's say giving tzedakah. It doesn't have to be a tremendous amount. So an hour of work, you give a quarter to tzedakah. Not because the quarter of tzedakah is the point, but the point is you're doing something physical to reinforce within you how you believe that your parnasa comes from Rabbanu Shlomo. Besides just saying it, and of course believing it, but you're doing something to sort of balance out your activity. So to whatever extent you're putting in energy to do a shtadlis, the Rebbe Pinchas Karitzer is telling us in Eitzah, to that extent, put in energy to reinforce your emunah physically. And that, again, that evens the playing field. It, at the same time that you're giving volume to the body by doing a shtadlis, you're also giving expression to the neshama by doing something physical to give to, again, whether it be tzedakah, opening it to Hillel, doing something. That's the final Eitzah from Pinchas Karitzer. So again, so just to recap some of the practical things, is again, in terms of lowering the volume of the guf, in particular to inyanim, to be makbid on one's eating, and to be makbid in men and women, that issue. That's in terms of the particularities that took sort of cut off the fuel supply of heresy of kfira, in terms of the nefesh, that's aleph. In terms of the things that are positive to do to reinforce, to give expression to one's emunah, it's by verbalizing one's emunah to say out loud that I believe, despite the fact that you think you don't. That's number one. Number two is to daven to Rabbanu Shloim about your emunah. Number three is to learn Tanakh. And number four is to do something physical to balance out all the hishtadlis that we do anyway. Okay. There was another area of life that I mentioned, which is to create an environment in which Amunah can express itself comfortably, right? Remember, there's lowering the volume of the body, there's raising the volume of the neshama, and there's creating an atmosphere that's conducive to Amunah. So one of the biggest eitzes that we find in the Sfarim in terms of creating an atmosphere that's conducive to Amunah is Simcha. Let's put it this way. A person who has Amunah, a person who opens their eyes and believes through and through and lives like this and feels it and it resonates with them emotionally that the Rabbanu Shalom has their back, the Rabbanu Shalom is taking care of them, everything's exactly the way it's supposed to be, that's a happy person. So which means that if we want to allow that Amunah to express itself, create an environment that's conducive for it, to create a happy environment. If we are Besimcha, then all of a sudden that shy turtle that's called Amunah will be more comfortable to come out of its shell. And so this is why we find, again, in Sefer Chassid is such a huge focus on being Besimcha. And sometimes, even with silly reasons, but just to make yourself happy, it's a tremendous inyan. When there's Simcha, then automatically that's an environment which fits with one's Amunah. It's a shidduch. Amunah, you could do everything you want, but Amunah is not going to come out necessarily in a strong way if the environment that you're expecting it to come out into is depressed. Because that's not a shidduch with Amunah. The more Amunah you have, the more happy you're going to be. So make yourself happy, you'll have more Amunah. That's the way it goes. So again, that's a very, very strong eitzah. One final nakuda that I just want to mention, and then we'll finish with this, is that there's a certain mindset